Wabash Folklore Radio. Written by Andy Hertzfeld and Company, and read by Derek Warren. Scrooge McDuck by Andy Hertzfeld. Time frame, February 1980. Burl Smith enjoyed doing intensive design work over the Christmas break, so the very first prototype of the very first Macintosh sprung to life in January of 1980. It wasn't really a standalone computer yet, as it resided on an Apple II expansion card, but it already contained the essential hardware elements of Jeff Raskin's Macintosh dream. A Motorola 6809E microprocessor, 64 kilobytes of memory, and a 256 by 256 bitmapped graphic frame buffer, which was hooked up to a cute, tiny 7-inch black-and-white display. Burl used the Apple II host to control the memory of the prototype so he could initialize the control registers and run small programs with the 6809. I went out to lunch with Burl a few weeks later, and knowing my appreciation for Steve Wozniak-like hardware hacks, he explained the crazy way that he contrived for the Apple II to talk with the prototype. He didn't want to waste time designing and wiring up hardware to synchronize the memory of the two machines, since none of that would be useful in the final product. Instead, he delegated the task of memory synchronization to the software, requiring the Apple II to hit a special memory address, telling the prototype how many microseconds later to grab data off the common data bus. It was weird enough to make me interested in seeing if it actually worked. By now, Burl thought that he had the graphics running properly, but he wasn't really sure. He still needed to write some software to try it out. I told him that I'd look into it when I had some time, and he gave me a copy of the magic addresses that I'd have to use, hoping that I'd get around to it soon. I was used to returning to the lab after dinner to see if anything interesting was going on and to work on various extracurricular projects. As it happened, I had some spare time that night, so I got out Burl's instructions and wrote an Apple II assembly language routine to do the necessary bit twiddling to transfer whatever was on the Apple II's high-res graphics display to the Mac prototype's frame buffer using Burl's unusual synchronization scheme. One of my recent side projects involved using Steve Wozniak's new 1-to-1 floppy disk interleave routines to make very fast slideshow disks on the Apple II. I had just made one full of Disney cartoon characters that were scanned by Bob Bishop, one of the early Apple software magicians. Bob adored the work of Carl Barks, the Disney artist who specialized in Donald Duck, and he had scanned dozens of Barks' Donald Duck images for the Apple II. I selected an image of Scrooge McDuck sitting on top of a huge pile of money bags, blithely playing his fiddle, with a big grin on his beak. It was starting to get late, but I was dying to see if my routine was working properly. It would be very cool to surprise Burl the next morning with a detailed image on the Mac prototype's display. But when I went to run the code, I noticed that Burl's Apple II didn't have a disk controller card, so there was no way to load my program. Damn! I couldn't shut the computer down to insert the card because I didn't know how to reinitialize the Macintosh board after power-up. Burl hadn't left the magic incantation for that. I thought I might be stuck until Burl came in the next day. The only other person in the lab that evening was Cliff Huston, who saw the trouble I was having. Cliff was another early Apple employee, the older brother of Dick Huston, and an experienced but somewhat cynical technician. I explained the situation to him and was surprised when he started to smile. Cliff told me that he could insert a disk controller card into Burl's Apple II with the power still on, without glitching it out, a miraculous feat. You would have to be incredibly quick and steady not to cause any short circuits, running the risk of burning out both the Apple II and the card. But Cliff said he'd done it many times before, and all that was required was the confidence that you could actually do it. So I crossed my fingers as he approached Burl's Apple like a samurai warrior, concentrating for a few seconds before holding his breath and slamming the disk card into the slot with a quick staccato thrust. I could barely make myself look, but amazingly enough, Burl's machine was still running and the disk booted up, so I could load the Scrooge McDuck image along with my conversion routine. And even more surprising, my routine actually worked the first time, displaying a crisp rendition of Uncle Scrooge fiddling away on the Mac's tiny monitor. The Apple II's graphics display only had 192 scan lines, while the embryonic Macintosh had 256, so I had some extra room at the bottom where I rendered the message, "Hi, Burl," in a nice-looking 24-point proportional font. By the time I came in the next morning, an excited Burl had already shown the image to everyone he could find. I helped him reload the image after he accidentally reset the prototype somehow, so he could show it to Tom Whitney, the engineering vice president, and Jeff Raskin, the creator of the Macintosh project. I think Jeff was pretty pleased to see his new computer start to come alive, but I don't think he was very happy about me giving the demo, since he thought I was too much of a hacker and not someone who was supposed to be involved with his pet project.